Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon. It's a Tuesday afternoon, the day after the national championship game in NCAA basketball. It's the Steve Jones Show. Chad Hershberger filling in for Sean Carey as the producer. Steve will be along momentarily. And sounds like a wild game last night there at the end a little bit. And Steve will probably tell us all about that. I have to admit, I actually went to bed, so I didn't get to see the end. But congratulations to Carolina on their win. We'll have some analysis on that, and that is our play of the day today as well. Coming up at 4:06, we'll have a look back at one of the plays from the game last night. Also coming up today on the show, we have Adam Purdy joining us about 3:35. He's going to talk about the Truman Purdy golf tournament that is coming up. That'll be coming up in May, and we will have him on the show today as well right here on the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Phillies were playing yesterday, so we didn't have a show for you yesterday, but we are back today with the Steve Jones Show right here on WKOK. We'll also, of course, check local news coming up at the bottom of the hour, too. And if you'd like to stay connected with us, make sure you check out Steve Jones Show Facebook page as well as the Steve Jones Show Twitter. And if you have either an Android or an iPhone, you can now get the Steve Jones Show podcast delivered right to your phone. We're on both of those platforms as well, so make sure that you check that out, too. You can be part of the show, and you can listen anywhere you go. I've actually used the podcast, played it in my car. Sounds pretty good. You can also get that on our website, the stevejonesshow.com, too. You can check that out as well. And as I mentioned, we've got our play of the day coming up will be from a big dunk that was in the game last night towards the end, national title game in basketball, collegiate basketball, Division I. We'll get that for you coming up at 4:06 today.
Very nice.
Very good afternoon, nice. Steve.
Good afternoon. Great to be with you. And of course, the Phillies will actually close out our week. We'll be here, today, tomorrow, but then Thursday, Friday, we've got Phillies baseball for you. So we got a few things going on here. How have you been?
I've been doing well.
Sean in the Bahamas again?
He is.
It's really kind of an amazing life that he leads. Every time I turn around, it's some offshore property somewhere. And not only that, but he keeps mentioning some offshore oil account. Don't know what that means.
They must have a different benefit plan than when I worked here full time.
I'm just telling you, Sean's invested wisely. And really, if everybody could discount all those rumors about Sean and the Russians. I mean, seriously. I mean, all that stuff where Sean's name was unmasked. No, really. Oh, my goodness. Although I did see something today where was it Susan Rice was interviewed and she says, "I said, I told nobody nothing." And I thought, you're from Stanford? He's like, really? Okay. Man, I'm from Penn State. We try not to do that. Okay. All right. So what was 4:06 today?
Our play of the day. We're going to have a cut from the National title game last night.
The national title game. First half, really, really good. Second half, did not help the game last night in any way, shape, or form. Level of play, not great. Too many missed shots. No flow in the second half. Really a poorly officiated game. Got to let him play a little bit. Got to let him play. Got to let the game have some flow. The game was not well officiated. I was surprised by one of the guys selected to do the championship game last night, because it's somebody I felt did not have their best season in the regular season. It's my opinion. Watching them. And the officiating hurt the game last night. CBS, which, along with Turner, I thought had a great tournament, did not have a good championship game last night. Did not. You have... When the obsession is with the toys and not the nuts and bolts of the game, that's not a good broadcast. We've got that track camera. Ooh, hey, really, I don't care about the track look. Don't care. Don't care about the sky view look, hey, unless it helps me see something. When they take you and they rotate you around, 180 degrees? To show you a play. Exactly what do any of us learn out of that? It sort of looks the same from all the angles, doesn't it? And it does. It looks the same from all the angles. And that, you know, so now let's get down to the basics. Of the players on the floor last night, Joel Berry was the best player on the floor. I thought that Williams-Goss, in the first half Perkins was, Williams-Goss throughout the night probably was the second best player on the floor. I thought Collins was the third best player on the floor last night. Except Collins fouled out. Now, can you tell me on Collins' second, third, fourth, and fifth fouls what he did? Okay, especially on his second and fifth fouls. What did he do? None of us knows, because CBS didn't show a replay of any of them. A guy fouls out who's pivotal in the outcome of the game, and you don't show us a replay of the foul? Really? So we can just sit there and judge for ourselves? Yeah, I can see why he shouldn't have done that. It's like, what they call that for? Why, you know? Why don't we see that? You have 18,000 cameras there. You even have one that rotates you around 180 to show you, because it's sponsored by somebody. And you don't show us the foul that, with 6 minutes to go, fouled out one of the three best players on the court that night? That changed, I think, the game? You don't show it to us? There was the one where... And then there was one Bill Raftery commenting, oh, he shouldn't have done that. Right. And Collins got called for the foul. It was one of the earlier fouls. I was like, well, okay, what did he do? Okay, because you couldn't see it. There's no replay. What? We got plenty of great shots, though, of the Bulldog. I thought that was good. John Stockton got some airtime. That was cool. But replays of pivotal fouls that help determine the possible outcome of the game? I don't know. When I see 21 fouls in 12 minutes on both teams, and please don't hand me this, they were committing fouls, okay? You gotta call stuff that's within the flow of the game. Okay? And it's just, it didn't help. In fact, it was brutal. Now, North Carolina fans don't care. I mean, North Carolina fans today feel the same way Steeler fans felt after Super Bowl 40, which was probably the poorest officiated Super Bowl I ever watched in my life. Now, do Steeler fans care? How poorly officiated that game was? No, they won. So, of course, they don't care. And I completely, thoroughly understand that. Your team won, so does it really matter? No. Not to them. But to a casual observer, to someone who likes the game, yeah, it does matter because it takes away from the enjoyment of the game. There are a lot of people that did not enjoy watching Super Bowl 40 because the game was so poorly officiated. Well, there are going to be a lot of people that didn't like watching last night's game because the game was so poorly officiated. And that's, you know, and it was not really, and it wasn't played well. In the first half of that was played pretty well. Second half was not played well. And CBS, which had a great tournament, I'll give you an example of a great sequence by CBS, and that's the Monk three-pointer for Kentucky to tie, followed by the May two-pointer to win it. Beautifully shot. Great sense of the moment. Sound couldn't have been better. Jim Nance was awesome, rising to the occasion, doing the whole sequence. That's as fine a college basketball broadcast sequence as you're going to see, where you really capture the essence of everything, and you enhance the moment. Not just capture the moment, but you enhance the moment. Well, CBS didn't enhance anything last night. It was just one of those nights where they weren't quite on their game. And with all the track cameras and things like that, you know, to be honest with you, one of the worst things that happens in this business, in my opinion, and I mean radio, and I mean TV. There are two things you cannot do. You cannot broadcast to please the critics, and you cannot broadcast to win awards. Okay? You have to just do it. You have to give the fan what they need to make the experience of the game better. Now, if it comes with an award or it comes with praise from a critic, so be it. But you cannot broadcast to the critics, and you can't broadcast to get awards. You can't. Okay? If you're doing all that just to show off for critics, or you're trying to show off to get awards and things like that, I'm sorry. That doesn't do the job if, when the night's done, the fan did not learn more about the game or you didn't enhance the experience of the game. That's all that matters. That's all that matters in this business. When you're done, when I'm done at 5 o'clock today, did you learn more about sports today? Did you learn more about the teams you like today? Did you learn more about some subject in sports today? I mean, every day that's the goal here. Every day. We're going to bring on a couple of guests today. We're going to bring on Ryan Snyder from Rivals. We're going to talk about recruiting. It's going to be a segment where a Penn State football fan is going to learn more, in my opinion. Neil Coulong is going to join us today from USA Today. We're going to talk about quarterbacks in the NFL, about the Tony Romo situation. I think when we're done with that, you, the fan, are going to learn a little bit more about what's going on. A week from today, Ed Henry from Fox News is going to be on. And even though he's the chief national correspondent for Fox News, he's a huge baseball fan that just wrote a book that was released today, entitled 42 Faith, about Jackie Robinson. And next week is the 70th anniversary. Next week, the 70th anniversary of Jackie Robinson playing his first Major League Baseball game. Well, the timing to get Ed Henry on the show can't be better. You'll learn more about that era and about Branch Rickey and about Jackie Robinson that you may not have known before, which will then, of course, Ed's trying to sell books. But there'll be more to it than just that. Again, when the show's done, did you learn more about something in the show? That's, you know, broadcasting should entertain, and sports broadcasting should have a combination of being entertaining, being informative, and also when the experience is over with, put you in the best seat to watch it or listen to it, but also when it's over with, made you feel like you know more about the game. I think almost every game in this tournament, CBS did that. And the crew that worked last night's game absolutely did that in the North Carolina-Kentucky game, and thought did it in the semifinals. Thought the second half last night? No, didn't. Nobody did. Gonzaga didn't play well in the second half. North Carolina played a little bit better. The officiating wasn't great. And the broadcast wasn't either in the second half. Just one of those nights. All right. Friday night football in the Big Ten. Northwestern has made its statement. We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, when the Big Ten, when it comes to television, has Penn State has benefited tremendously from it. They've benefited from the TV packages, Big Ten Network, the money. And the money is going to be greater and the exposure greater than ever with the new contract that starts on July 1st. But there's one area of this, and it's one of the few times I've been critical of the TV package of the Big Ten, and that's when I saw that they were going to have Friday Night Football as part of the package. And I was critical of it right away because when you look at Friday nights, to me the SEC and the Big Ten happen to be two entities in college that don't need a Friday night package. They don't need it, in my opinion. And to me, Friday night, I mean, I'm okay with Friday Night Football when it comes to it's an American Conference game, it's a Conference USA game, it's, you know, Mountain West game, something. Okay? I mean, that's nice exposure on a Friday night. But for a power conference such as this one, especially the SEC and the Big Ten, they don't need that. Well, to the credit of Northwestern, they were supposed to be involved in two of the games this year, the ones coming up. And guess what? They fought back and said no. And I give them a lot of credit for that because they're talking about the unintended consequences of this. Well, you know what? The unintended consequences. What, nobody thought of the unintended consequences when it came to this? Can you imagine? Now, Penn State has said no. Penn State and Michigan were the first two to come out and say, well, we're not playing on Friday night. Okay? Guess when you play on a Friday night or during the week, guess what happens that normally doesn't happen to a college football team when you play on the road on a Friday night. College football happens to be one of those sports, right? I mean, I'll give you an example. Penn State football. Over the years, with one exception, a trip to USC back in 1990, okay. Guess what Penn State football has never missed during the season? A class. You realize that? When you play on Saturdays, you don't miss any classes, even when you travel. That's one. Now here's another one for you. What if they had a home game here at Beaver Stadium on a Friday? Well, what time do you open the parking lots? What do you do with the people who are working all day who park there during the day? What do you do? What about kids that are in school that day? I mean, what? It's crazy.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, our Monday show, even though this is Tuesday, is always brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street and Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. I was talking with one business owner yesterday, one business owner last week, and their business has been with Purdy since 1947. That says it all. It's from somebody I greatly respect that told me that. That, to me, is a statement unto itself. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors KIA, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. 1921, the Ottawa Senators beat the Vancouver Millionaires in the 1921 Stanley Cup Finals. The Senators became the first NHL team to win back-to-back Stanley Cup titles. 1971, Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia was dedicated. I remember going to a game with my late friend Patrick Scholl at Citizens Bank Park, and we were walking in. Citizens Bank Park is a great ballpark. Love going there. And we were walking past, and they had not cleaned out the rubble yet from the vet, and I looked over at Patrick and said, that's the best that place ever looked. 1974, Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth's Major League home run record with 714. He hit it off Jack Billingham in Cincinnati. Dennis Potvin of the Islanders, 1987, became the first defenseman in NHL history with 1,000 career points. Well, let's see. Also on this date, 1996, Michael Jordan became the fourth player in NBA history to reach 2,000 career steals. He was a great defensive player. 1998. Mark McGwire became the second National League player ever to hit a home run in the opening four games of the season. Willie Mays had done the same thing in 1971. 1999, the Colorado Rockies, San Diego Padres played the first Major League Baseball opener in Mexico. Rockies beat the Padres 8-2. The game was also the first season opener to be held in a country outside of the U.S. or Canada. That is this day in sports history. Next half hour, we'll have Ryan Snyder on from Rivals.com and Blue White Illustrated. We'll talk recruiting. And a week from today at Henry Fox News, Chief National Correspondent of Fox News, we will not be talking about Russia. We will be talking about Jackie Robinson because he wrote a book about Jackie Robinson. And next week is the 70th anniversary of Jackie Robinson officially breaking the color barrier. The book is entitled 42 Faith. It is in bookstores today. Neil Coulong now joins us, USA Today. Neil, welcome back. Tony Romo is going to get his release from the Cowboys. He might retire. If he does, he might go into broadcasting. When I look at the pool of quarterbacks, to me, I see a guy like Romo go out, and it makes me think that there are 18 guys that are maybe good to great in this league, and that's it. I mean, do you agree with that number?
That's an excellent question. I think that bar kind of it shifts year to year. I think we saw it probably drop down a little bit with Peyton Manning's retirement. He certainly didn't have a great final season or anything like that, but it's really hard to get to that level, and I think that people see the height of it being a unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer, probably one of the three best players of all time, being what's outstanding in the league. That's really good. It's like, well, that's kind of historic. That's kind of incredible. So it really kind of depends on what you're looking for with it. I got to say probably something more like 12 or 13 before he becomes somebody that you really can't win alone with him. And I say right. that thinking last year at this time, I probably would have put like Matt Ryan in that 11-12 spot. Look where he is now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so much can change year to year. You have to kind of look at it as you would anything else. I mean, the top third of something is probably going to be really good. So for me, it's probably 11, somewhere in there. But there are a lot of guys that can play passable quarterback in the NFL. You just really notice that top six and then the bottom 10 or so who are just horrendously bad and teams trying to get through the season so they can move on. But that middle gap that kind of often gets misinterpreted as being, you know, mediocre or average, and these guys could be, you know, historically speaking, pretty outstanding.
See, I look at, for example, Tony Romo and Andy Dalton, for example, as guys who are good NFL quarterbacks, but they aren't the ones that can take a good team and make them a great team. They have to have other elements around them to be a great team, great defense, something. That's how I look at those two. How do you look at those two?
I think looking at Dak Prescott right now would be an answer, at least for Romo.
Yeah,
And we'll never know, granted, but what could they have done? I mean, they had all those pieces together, and the reason that Ezekiel Elliott, a player that made that team, you know, pretty good on his own right, the reason they were in a position to draft him is because they didn't have Tony Romo the year before. And
right.
Before that, they were one, you know, kind of quasi, perhaps, depending on what side of the fence you're on, a controversial call away from the NFC Championship game. That was a really good Cowboys team back in 2015. So, or 2014, I mean. So make the argument that Romo brought them to a higher level when he was in there, and then they brought in another guy who also played pretty well. You know, as an individual, I thought Dak Prescott did pretty well up until the first half of the divisional game against the Packers this past year. You erased that. He had a great season. What would the veteran have done in that first half? You know, Prescott was not the same player that we had seen all year. You have to think that nerves were something of a factor in that game, and they would have won if not for an absolutely incredible throw and catch from Aaron Rodgers and I'm forgetting his name, Jared Cook. You put all that together, and you had a pretty strong Cowboys team that really the difference was a high-level running back that they acquired because they didn't have their quarterback the year before. So I at least for in Romo's case, I think I'd probably put him overall better than that average group.
Okay, gotcha.
But I don't know how deep into that I'd go.
Yeah, because it's interesting. You mentioned the deal with Romo. They get Elliott. Well, that's exactly how the Indianapolis Colts got Andrew Luck. They got the same way. Because Manning was out all year. Remember that? That was the year, for example, that people were saying that when Manning didn't play, maybe we ought to vote him for the MVP. Look what happened to him.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That team completely fell apart when he wasn't in there, and that really shows the value of a quarterback. What's really interesting, though, is to counter that. Granted, the Colts have been without Luck a little bit, but Luck hasn't progressed anywhere near to what you know, people said he was going to be. And you've seen plenty of other quarterbacks step up in the amount of time that they've had and be far more contributory to their team's success than Luck has been. Luck has been, he's put up pretty decent numbers. More than anything, what's been impressive with him, he's led his team from behind to win in fourth quarters. He puts together scoring drives when his team has needed them, but outside of that, he still throws a lot of interceptions. He makes a lot of questionable decisions. It really makes you wonder, at what point here do you have to say that a guy like Andrew Luck is really not, I mean, certainly that the Colts have plenty of problems, and I think there are probably another year or two away before they can fully utilize it. But you know what? The Falcons didn't get a whole lot of time to rebuild either. They don't have, you know, scores of middle-round picks to go with. They turned everything around in two seasons under a new coach. So maybe the Colts will do the same. I'm not sure.
Why is it that we are not seeing great depth at that position right now? I mean, it has to be a bunch of theories as to why. I mean, that's why, you know, when Roethlisberger plays his little game about threatening to not, you know, well, maybe I want to retire, whatever, you know, which is, it's his life, Steeler fans ought to be very, very afraid.
I think what it really boils down to is the fact that it's extremely unlikely to find one of those high-level quarterbacks, and it's really easy to find one who might be all right. So with it, there's a level of scarcity that goes with it. And it's not necessarily because they can't play all that well. It's because you look at the guys that can, and you set yourself to that standard. That's what you have to be. I think really what it is, it's evolution of the position, the advancement of exercise science, nutrition, all of that puts much better athletes into those positions, along with, you know, your basic growth and development of the position itself. More games are played, more you can learn from. So the high-end guys are so far above and beyond historic comparison. We're looking at that as the standard. It was never easy to find those guys. They just came. I think more of them came out, and with it, offenses evolved to be essentially unstoppable with high-level players. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, you have a tough time beating those guys, plain and simple, because that's the way the game's played. You know, because the league wanted offense to rule and the quarterbacks to be the stars. There just aren't many guys that can take full advantage of that. It's just really hard to find.
Look, historically, if you really want to take some time, look up, and it only takes 15 minutes to do this, but take a moment to look up the stats of Johnny Unitas, Bart Starr, I mean, all the way through. I don't care what it is, John Brody, whatever, some of the quarterbacks from way back. And realize how many, Y.A. Tittle, how many interceptions they threw. They threw a ton of interceptions in the course of their career. Today's offenses are designed to minimize mistakes. Is the fact that they're, is part of the minimizing mistakes taking away some of the risk that can make a great quarterback or not?
That's a great way to view it. And I would say this. There was a point I remember looking up this stat just because Houston's offense at this point under Gary Kubiak looked a lot like a Bill Walsh's offense would if you sent it through, you know, two more decades of refining and tweaking and everything like that. Matt Schaub's numbers were not that dissimilar from Joe Montana at one point in his career.
That's right.
What does that tell you?
Yeah.
You know, just the growth of the position, and you hit the nail on the head. They don't take tons of risks down the field the way that they used to, because back then everything was run on basically the ground game. When you threw a lot deeper down the field. You know, why it is that they wanted to do that? One of the reasons could have been because defensive backs could, you know, kind of kick the tar out of them up and down the field if they wanted to. It takes a little bit longer to get down the field and be able to, you know, find an open space. You know, so with that, perhaps it was a little bit easier for quarterbacks in today's game to throw quick, shorter stuff and maximize run after the catch. With that, their numbers are going to go up on high percentage throws. And also, scoring is going to go up. Their passer rating is going to go up, and that's a lot of what you see historically. The guys back then, just plain and simple, just had a much, much harder job completing passes down the field than they do today.
Yeah, because, I mean, in fact, what I did when you were answering that, Neil, I called up Johnny Unitas' stats. Johnny Unitas threw 290 touchdown passes in his career in 18 seasons. That's great. He also threw 253 interceptions. Well, if a quarterback today throws 253 interceptions, they won't last to get to 253. Fair enough?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Nobody will throw 250 interceptions unless it's Tom Brady playing when he's 64 years old. You know, they won't let them play that long. Just offenses are not built that way anymore.
No, I mean, they really aren't. Now, you brought up Elliott. United, well, yeah, let's go back to United. United's had things built around that running game, which, you know, he called his own plays, play action, things like that. So is it possible that a guy like him comes in and he revives the running back in the league? Because there are three or four this year that I think have suddenly become intriguing in the first and second round.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting about the NFL historically is things, you know, ebb and flow. There was a time, a lesser sophisticated version of what is traditionally called the West Coast offense ruled. You had guys catching 140 passes a season, like Chris Carter, and averaged like 9.5 yards a catch or something like that.
Right.
It was all
yeah.
about the shorter pass. Then we didn't really care about the running back. It wasn't that big of a deal. But you see teams put together a decent amount of success, if not a high-level success, by being able to run the football.
Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Neil Coulong, USA Today. Let's bring in Adam Purdy now because the weather's been nice the last couple of days, and I want to play golf. Adam, welcome.
Hey, Steve. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Doing well. The countdown is on now, a month away, before we get to the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. So where does the planning stand right now?
Well, registrations are out, so hopefully everybody has their registration through the mail. We're getting all of our prizes put together and have some nice things lined up for this year like we usually do. So we're at the point where we're just waiting for registrations to start rolling in and hope we can have as good a year this year as we have in the past.
And no question about that. Now, Adam, let's get to the number of flights. Idealistically, how many flights would you like to have in the morning, and idealistically, how many in the afternoon?
Sure. In the morning, you know, if we can get 12 to 15 teams in the morning, that's a good start for the day. Gives us enough time to turn the carts and the teams around for the afternoon, which starts at 1 o'clock. And then in the afternoon, we've, you know, anywhere from 30 to, we've had as many as 35 in the afternoon. So we hate to turn anyone away. It's a great event, in our opinion, and it's a good way to kick off the kind of the charity or tournament season here. So we'll take as many as we can, but I think the absolute cutoff would probably be, you know, 45 to 50 teams throughout the day.
And hopefully people can get involved as quickly as possible to make sure their spot is reserved for their foursome. It's the Greater Exactly. Susquehanna Valley YMCA that ends up being one of the beneficiaries of this. What has made that a special outreach for the Purdy family?
Well, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's an organization that my grandfather spent a lot of time with and was sat on their board of directors for a number of years. And we have my uncle and some folks in our office that are involved on the board. And personally, I have my children that go there through the Giant Step program and different programs that they offer for kids. They have a lot of athletic things for the, you know, for the school-age students, and they even have outside of the athletics. They have a great art center that my oldest son enjoys going to. So they have a, you know, a wide range of project or you know, activities and programs that everybody really can enjoy. So we, you know, that's part of the reason we enjoy supporting the Y.
And not only that, it's a great organization that really affects so many, not just kids, but various areas of the community across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not just children. I mean, they have programs, you know, from their I think they call it their Silver Sneaker program for senior citizens for their, you know, exercise activities. And they have a whole range of, you know, activities and programs for people of all ages that come through the door.
Your grandfather obviously is very passionate about this, about giving back. What was it growing up in a family that, you know, obviously was in a business, still is in a business that's thriving, but also at the same time felt that, you know, that drive to give back to the community that you love so much?
Right. Well, growing up and watching my grandfather kind of lead by example and being so active in the community is kind of what, you know, drove me to get into this role in the tournament and helping raise money for the YMCA and other things that I'm involved with in the community. But, you know, we realize and appreciate that this is the community in which we live and work and has provided well for us. And any opportunity that we have to give back, you know, we certainly jump on it.
What's your favorite grandfather story?
Oh, man. One or two that I probably can't share on the air. I can share with you at the tournament because there's a couple of choice words that wouldn't be appropriate. But, you know, there's a number of them. But, you know, favorite stories would, you know, just really come from weekends with him or little trips we take here. And they're probably one of my favorites was I had the opportunity and good fortune to take a fishing trip with him up in Canada and spend some time, you know, doing that and going to Penn State games and you know, weekends with him and doing all the kinds of things, even grandfather grandson type of things that you know, people hope to do. And I had the opportunity to enjoy a lot of those with him.
That is so cool. For people who would like to get involved in the tournament beyond the mailings and the reminders you made, how can they do it?
Sure. They can call the Y directly at 570-286-5636. Or if they want, they can shoot me an email, adam@purdyinsurance.com, and we can get a registration form to them. And we, like I said, we'll take as many as we can. All the money, as we've said, goes to help offset the cost of children's programs. So it's really, you know, going for a good cause here and providing a lot of services to kids and others that couldn't otherwise afford them.
It is an absolutely great day. We're proud to be a part of it again this year. Adam, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again very shortly.
Thanks, Stephen. If you don't mind, I just want to say hi to my sons, AJ and Owen. They were patiently waiting at home with Mom to hear Dad come on the radio. So, hi, hey, boys. I'll see you soon.
AJ, Owen, just so you know, that doggone Neil Coolong ate up part of the. That's why Dad had to wait.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you having me on here and all that you do for our tournament. I look forward to seeing you here in May.
Okay, look forward to it very much. Adam, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll come back next half hour. Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com, Blue White Illustrated. We'll talk about recruiting and Penn State football recruiting as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. The ratings on last night's national championship game, rock solid. CBS could not have been happier. The tournament couldn't be happier. They did a 14.5 for the championship game, third highest since 2005. Also, the overall overnight average for the entire tournament, second highest since 2005. All great stuff. Last night they peaked at 17.4. Now, it's going to be higher than last year, and I pointed that out when the tournament began. Expect that this press release would come out. I've said that for 3 weeks because it was on TBS last year. And being on the over-the-air, CBS makes a difference and kicked it up. Top markets, no surprise. Raleigh-Durham, 33. Greensboro, High Point, Winston-Salem, 31.7. Charlotte at a 30.1. Seattle-Tacoma, 24.5. And then the markets outside of the ones that would have a vested interest in the game, Louisville was 23.5. I mean, all really, really good numbers, and their streaming numbers are good and things like that. So I think it delivered the way they hoped it would. Of course, this is the biggest moneymaker for the NCAA. And the ratings, by the way, up 21% this year over last year's championship game. But again, that's to be expected because of the CBS component as opposed to TBS. Next year, we'll be doing the story talking about how the rating fell from this year to next year. Okay, we're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk about the 2018 rating being lower than the 2017 rating. And again, it's going to be the TBS factor. They get it next year. I mean, no. So the comparison is going to be, what did 2018 TBS look like to 2016 TBS? But the numbers were all really good from last night. Tony Romo. Wow. We may go into broadcasting. And we can put him on from 5 to 7 if he wants a show here. What do you think? That could be a nice lead-in to the Tony Romo show on WKOK. What do you think?
It's worth a shot.
That's... Wheels are already turning in the back room. I can hear it now.
I'm sure they could sell some digital media with the suit.
Well, no. Well, it's really great because they're telling the suit right now who Tony Romo is.